participating only in the audio portion of the teleconference. There will not be any dialogue back and forth. They are able to participate in terms of being able to listen as to what the testimony is at this time. There's been quite a concern expressed by a number of the utility users throughout the state regarding the activities of the Alaska Public Utilities Commission. The Alaska Public Utilities Commission is not before us at this time. We will be conducting the sunset review hearings later on this month, but please feel free, since you are here in person, to comment and express your concerns regarding the activities there that you envision with the commission, and possibly some direction there that you might be able to give us, or questions there that would help us in our deliberations with the commission at a later date. There are approximately, looks like about 15 sites online, all the way from Anchorage to Sitka, and a number of other conference sites that will be participating. So let me remind those of you that are testifying that before you on the in the table here in the middle of the room is a microphone. Make sure that you identify yourself, if you would, please, and either depress the little black bar, or there is a switch that is labeled off or lock, and if you would put it on the lock, you won't have to depress the bar, but it'll allow the other participants around the state to at least hear your testimony. We do have a number of people that are here to participate in the presentation here, and I would like, if we could, to try to limit the testimony. I'm not going to discourage anybody from participating, but if we could limit the testimony to 5 to 10 minutes, sir, I think it would be most helpful. I'm not going to set up a timer, but maybe we'll wave or flash when we think you're going a little bit overboard. For the record, the legislators that we have present, Representative Navarri from the House is the chairperson from the Labor and Commerce Committee, and maybe I'll have him go ahead and introduce his members that are here.
Thank you, Senator Shara. Members present are Representative Davis, Representative Hanley, and Representative Pierce. And I'd like to let the other teleconference sites know that although you're not participating other than in a listening capacity this time, there will be opportunity in the future for you to have your input and your say in the APUC hearings.
The Senate, unfortunately, there are members of the Labor and Commerce Committee. Many of them are on the Finance Committee, and this is a conflicting time with us, so bear in mind that we have one senator here, Senator Jaroff. So I guess with that, we'll go ahead and begin the testimony, and Mr. Lloyd Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to come before the committee and the fact that they have arranged these hearings at a convenient time. My name is Lloyd Hodson. I serve as general manager of Alaska Village Electric Cooperative, a position held for 14 and a half years. I've been an Alaska resident since 1960 and have held several prominent management positions during that time. I would like to speak from the viewpoint of a consumer member also, having been a member of Golden Valley Electric Association for several years and a current member of Shugach Electric Association for many years. Bureaucratic growth is particularly dangerous in the case of APUC, which has a triple leverage on costs. One, they're a large chunk of the state operating budget. Number two, all expensive consultants they can hire or force consultants to hire under directives. And three, the worst, by driving up utility rates by forcing ill-advised, highly opinionated, and costly procedures. In quick initial summary, Alaska Village Electric Cooperative's primary number one recommendation would be that the nonprofit electric utilities financed by the Rural Electrification Administration or the National Rural Utilities Cooperative Finance Corporation, organized under the provisions of AS Title 10, Chapter 25 be exempt from APUC regulations. The only authority and duty APUC would have for nonprofit electric utilities would be to issue certificates of public convenience and necessity under Alaska Statute Title 42, Chapter 5, Article 3 to prevent duplication of service. There are already a minimum of four levels of control: members, the elected boards, REA, CFC, audits and feasibility review, and an annual CPA audit. The need for APUC in this scheme is non-existent, and only APUC has created the illusion they are needed. Regulation of member-owned nonprofit utilities is always the lowest priority need for regulation because there is already provision for exercise of democratic voting rights of the members to elect or remove the policy-making board. There isn't any commission required to regulate the elected legislature since they are also periodic subject to the vote by the people. The primary thrust of the wording of Title 42, Chapter 5, with tough enforcement provisions, fines, and so on, is to deal with difficult profit-making utilities trying for maximum return and where some control is needed to ensure adequate service. The same controls are not needed, or are they cost-effective for nonprofit utilities with member-elected boards? We suggest the savings realized by the APUC staff cutback to the elimination of this redundant and burdensome regulatory process be directly appropriated to this cooperative so AVEC can get on with actually improving electric service facilities. Many states do not regulate nonprofit electric cooperatives, and Alaska doesn't need to either. Actual use of these statutes by APUC has been used to drive up electric utility rates to consumers, fatten the pockets of consultants, and bloated the APUC staff. Only the legislature can effectively curb these excesses. Courts are relatively slow, expensive, and already overworked. Many of these comments are primarily directed at criticism of the APUC executive staff, but to the degree the commission supports them with little or no question, they're equally responsible for the course of events. In order to survive the forthcoming budget acts, APUC is taking an activist role to create even more regulations and rules, attempting to create a sense of hysteria in the needs of their services. Where APUC attempts arbitrary enforcement outside service standards to an excessively tight degree at this stage of village transitional development, they will drive up the cost of electric service and push electric service costs beyond the means of economic reach of a great number of village consumers, or directly increase assistance appropriation levels by the state. The APUC currently has far too broad an authority to adversely affect utility practices and efficiency with the limited level of talent, experience, and intelligent judgment they can assemble to work or be affiliated with the organization. Part of this lack of suitable talent problem is, in some critical areas, is not due to any pay scales, but the reputation established for chaotic, arbitrary, and inefficient operations. In reality, what APUC needs to do is to exercise intelligent executive direction and concentrate on what they're supposed to do, keeping out areas that they do not have the expertise or broad historical viewpoint to deal with, and stop the often demonstrated attitude they know better than the boards or management. Alaska Village Electric Cooperative is a nonprofit electric utility that has an elected board of directors from the largely native villages served. The AVEC program was seriously undercapitalized in the beginning and never has had, or probably never will have, the investment capital to build everything in a total uptown style. The biggest problem was a full-blown commitment to an underground system in a permafrost areas. This results in a large number of cable breaks in many areas at the worst possible times, such as January, when temperatures are minus 40 degrees, 20-knot gusting winds, 3 feet of snow, 10-foot drifts, 4 feet of rock-hard ground, and if there is any digging equipment, it won't start. Virtually all of the safety discrepancies APUC staff has trumpeted to the sky are related to that buried cable decision and attempts to maintain service in the most difficult of conditions and at the same time make improvements as funds were available without raising rates out of reach. AVEC board and management wants a totally safe system as much or more than anyone, but you can't totally ignore other factors such as history, geography, costs, local culture and attitudes, traditions, whether an economic ability to build and pay for a certain level of service. APUC uses safety as a major basis to justify their actions and perhaps try to discredit AVEC before this committee in an attempt to negate part of this testimony. The APUC should be chastised for stimulating or encouraged division and criticism in the past year instead of trying to assist in improving the situation with available resources on an objective basis. Some of the current APUC ideas are rampant with poor judgment and a complete ignorance or indifference to operating cost impact. They frequently put out very complex regulations involving major potential increases in APUC staff or for the consumer, yet have the arrogance and apparent feeling of total immunity of being called to account, officially saying, quote, "The Commission does not anticipate that the adoption of these proposed regulations will require an increased appropriation," unquote. Why is APUC so anxious to force the use of expensive outside consultants? A case could be made that much of the recent activity is primarily directed to create a seemingly large backlog of unresolved cases and problems, and hence the need for more appropriations now or in the future as they approach the sunset hearings of the legislature. To explore this point, on January 16, 1984, John Farley, executive director of APUC, put out a letter with the following statement, quote, "Upon approving the Alaska Public Utility Commission's fiscal year 1984 budget appropriation, Alaska legislature took the opportunity to remind the commission that state resources are under pressure." The APUC director next visited the Northwest Mayor's Conference the very next month, which is made up of a group of larger communities in Northwest not served by AVEC, plus other smaller communities served by AVEC or others. As a result of this conference, Mr. Farley emerged with a resolution which contained certain criticism of AVEC. Normally, upon receipt of a complaint, APUC is charged by their own regulations to refer the complaint to the utility for response. If a specific complaint against a utility could not be resolved by the cooperative staff, this would be resolved by the cooperative's board of directors, and from there, if not resolved, to the APUC. These steps were apparently unilaterally waived for this case by the APUC executive director. In effect, no inquiry was made as to the validity of the general allegations made. Incidentally, information was subsequently come to AVEC that the subject resolution, written in an unnecessarily inflammatory manner, was prepared by an employee of another state agency, which in turn seemed to be used to justify all the subsequent APUC activities. There seems to be some continuing communication with the director of APUC in the prolonged attempts to discredit AVEC. We are, however, not attempting to explore this possible conspiracy angle further at this time. The main point here is that APUC executive director did not handle this in a proper procedural manner to promptly establish facts, but rather used as a tool to create the subsequent massive additional workload over the past year for the commission staff and the cooperative. The question is, why did the APUC pick the summer of 1984, a few months before these sunset hearings, to suddenly come down like a hammer on AVEC after virtually no attention for several years, particularly in the face of A, major progress with over $10 million in new and improved village facilities installed over the period. B, substantial system-wide fuel efficiency improvements which were accomplished and AVEC took a leadership role in forcing fuel prices reductions in Western Alaska, which together currently contribute to saving the state $1 million per year in reduced PCE payments under the level they would have been with their earlier values. Major increase paid all 44 cities for payment to village operators. No increase in basic tariff rates over a period now extending beyond 7 years in the face of over 53% general inflation in the same time period. Someone was keeping costs in check. At the same time, produced comfortable margins allowing village consumer members owner equity to grow and provide for larger future dividends. AVEC management through a variety of action was a major factor in forcing competitive bidding of fuel throughout Western Alaska, resulting in savings not only for the cooperative, but also for other fuel users in the Western Alaska also. Average AVEC staff labor rates were maintained below utilities of similar gross operating revenues. More consumers were served every year, more kilowatt hours generated, more kilowatt hours sold every year. With AVEC looking outstanding in real cost control, APUC had to do something to stir up a hornet's nest or they might not be needed. What a pity. AVEC is currently a success, is financially strong, and has the best chance of any entity to keep supplying the villages with power, obtaining loans, and survive financially and operationally in the rough times ahead, if AVEC can prevent excessive outside meddling. A copy of a resolution passed by all AVEC delegates at the last annual meeting in support of AVEC is attached. All the delegates are 100% elected by village members to represent the villages. This was unanimously passed and signed several weeks after the previously mentioned state agency-prepared resolution touched off the secret four-month APUC buildup to the secret July tourist season inspections mentioned below. The cooperative found out about this when they happened to arrive in villages. Another grievance is secret inspections remote village electric systems without notice. Several APUC engineering inspectors, apparently under the direction of the executive director, made unannounced inspections in July 1984 to remote AVEC villages with no notice to the cooperative. Two APUC engineers even traveled all the way to St. Lawrence Island near Siberia for a few hours seeking, quote, problems to solve. It would have been far more effective for AVEC to have had people along if there were any discrepancies uncovered so that it could have been quickly corrected on the spot or corrections scheduled. The question is, why did APUC elect to keep this long plan assault secret? Failure to inform the utility in a timely manner of the safety discrepancies uncovered is another problem. The engineering staff visited AVEC villages were in July. A high portion of the whole APUC engineering staff was launched out, ranging across the summer countryside as far as 800 miles from home at a cost of thousands of state dollars, which could have been used for needed cooperative system improvements. For some reason, the results of these inspections were kept secret from the utility until over 60 days from the first initial meeting with the APUC staff in late September concerning various items. The July 4th to 12th field trip with inflammatory and presumptive language finally ended up over 40 days later in an August 24th APUC engineering report which says, quote, AVEC needs to get its act together, unquote. Who needs to get their act together? The other July field report was finally prepared after equal delay under the date of September 4th, 1985. Late in September, the utility had a first look at these findings where certain items therein were described as serious, unquote. In orders issued some 130 further days after the inspection date. Who knows why these reports took so long other than bureaucratic inertia or indifference to anyone questioning their behavior?
Excuse me, Mr. Hobson?
Yes.
In the interest of time and the other people who are here to testify, could we perhaps get a copy of your testimony for members of the committee, and also could you wind up a little bit so we can take testimony from the others, and then if we have time we'd be happy to come back to you. I don't want to not allow other people to testify.
Okay.
Thank you.
If it would be okay, I'll complete this area and then quickly go through some of the other points I wanted to make, and then I have a little closing statement. Finally, an APUC order dated November 15, 1984, finally came out after the snow buildup for AVEC to clean up the discrepancies in 15 days. That order, written in an inflammatory manner and widely distributed, came out some 130 days after the date of the first field inspections and over 100 days from completion of the last APUC inspection, yet gave the utility only 15 bid-letter days to comply. I next developed information regarding requests for AVEC documents. There is an attachment to my testimony indicating that APUC had came in and requested literally thousands of AVEC documents to look at, and then went through and produced hundreds of copies as a result of this. And then when we questioned their need for these documents, they turned around and says, if you charge us for these documents, we'll turn around and bill you anyway. I next go into the fact that they have gone right in and requested all of the personnel records. I'd like to quickly go through this point. In February, the court ruled that under the very broad current statutory authority granted by APUC, that the cooperative would have to produce detailed personnel records for the APUC staff. So on March 1st, 1985, 380 pages of AVEC personnel documents reproduced at cooperative expense and were delivered to APUC with individual salaries and background training on designated employee categories. Where does Big Brother and this frontier state stop? If they requested this information from all other REA utilities in the state, the APUC staff would have over 5,000 pages of data to establish salaries, select personnel, and lay out organizational structures, assuming two of them can agree on the same thing. Meanwhile, who is getting the rate cases out within 6 months? I think the last point that's very important, since this affects a number of the people here in regard to the PCA to PCE conversion, and I'd like to have a couple of minutes to point out a couple of things here. When the change to the power cost assistance, the power cost equalization, was enacted last session, the legislature provided for a very simple changeover from the prior PCA program by enacting a few simple changes in price and usage thresholds and other minor changes. The APUC had already gone through the time to develop elaborate regulations developed and issued on October 9, 1981, as a result of the PCA program. Assuming efficiency was of concern to APUC, the simple logical way for the executive staff of APUC to put out PCE into effect would have been to take the initial PCA regulations, mark them up to provide for PCE, and issue them in a maximum of 5 days' time. As a net effect of this, the way the regulations came out, a headline article in the front page of the Tundra Drums dated November 8, 1984 indicated that Bethel Utilities consumers lost $10,000 by this arbitrary APUC action. Blankenhider Regional Electric Authority sent a violent protest letter on October 11, 1984, including copies to many legislatures, which further expands on the problems of lack of logic in the arbitrary APUC action. AVEC village consumers in the 48 villages were also taken by the APUC to the tune of an estimated $115,000 in October 1984. APUC staff then had the gall to infer the utilities were responsible for the reduced assistance levels. In the interest of time and other factors, additional information will be provided as required. While we have other grievances with the APUC, some of them equally disturbing, there is enough information presented here to see the problems developing with an agency which feels they have no one to answer to seriously other than to refill their state coffers each year. To the degree they have excellent political connections, perhaps they are right. To the degree we wish to truly move to more efficient utility operations in Alaska, they are seriously wrong. To the degree they are allowing a tool of government to lack understanding, be arbitrary and oppressive, perhaps vindictive, they are to be condemned. Thank you for the opportunity of presenting some testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Hudson. I appreciate you taking the time. Would you remain, please, there? I think we may have a few questions. We did extend to you the latitude there of going beyond the 10 minutes. And I think basically you're covering some of the issues and concerns that others have had and have had expressed to various legislators over the last couple of days that we've had the opportunity to meet with many of you. Representative Cotton has joined us, and also Senator Bill Ray has joined us as well. Are there any questions? Senator Ray?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if I might just...
Senator Ray, we are teleconference to other sites, so if you would use the microphone, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wondered to ask this gentleman... AVEC, are they electric cooperatives just like the Alaska Utilities, or are they? Do they come under some special constraints? In other words, can't they opt out if they wanted to?
As indicated in my testimony, a number of the utilities have recently opted out, and APUC has recently put out regulations which in effect brings them back under regulation.
They have to come back under. That's your complaint, right?
Yes, among many other things in my full testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you,
sir. Are there any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could we also get a list of all the AVEC members?
We have, you mean the member villages?
Right.
Yes. We'd be very happy to provide that.
We would appreciate your written comments, sir, if you would, please. And then also to any of the sites that are on or listening in, if you have any written comments that you wish to send to the House or Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, please do so. It's Pouch V, as in Victor, Juneau, 99811. And we'll be looking forward to your comments. Bear in mind that we are planning to have a sunset hearing on the APUC, probably the middle of the month, around the 15th or thereabouts. Thank you, Mr. Hudson. Appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
We do have also a Dr. Joyce Murphy.
Thank you, Chairman Zaroff, Chairman Navarre, and members of the committee. My name is Joyce Murphy, and I am president of the Chugach Electric Association Board of Directors. Chugach is headquartered in Anchorage. We are the largest electric cooperative and the largest electric utility in the state. We serve approximately 60,000 retail consumers in Anchorage and in the Kenai Peninsula. In addition, we are the wholesale power supplier for Matanuska Electric Association, Homer Electric Association, and the City of Seward. Overall, Chugach has the power supply responsibility for half the population of the state. Last year was Chugach's best ever. We settled a long-standing territorial dispute with Anchorage's Municipal Light and Power. We dramatically reduced outage times, and we ended 1984 with more than $13 million in margins without a rate increase. The point is that Chugach is a healthy co-op capable of making our own day-to-day decisions. The other point is that the Alaska Public Utilities Commission won't let us. I want to make it clear right off the record, right on the record, that Chugach is not advocating elimination of the APUC. We believe the commission serves a necessary purpose in establishing service areas, regulating rates, and pursuing consumer complaints. I say this as president of the Chugach board and as a consumer with a strong consumer advocacy background. I and several other members of the board were actively involved in the Alaska Consumer Advocacy Program and other consumer-related activities. We were elected to the board on this basis. I got acquainted with the APUC as a consumer activist, and I have testified before it as both a consumer and as the Chugach board president. I and other Chugach board members who have been directly elected by our consumer owners honestly believe the APUC has overextended itself. It has become more than the regulatory agency it should be. It has become a super board of directors and has become involved in the day-to-day management activities of Chugach and others of the 112 utilities it regulates. This is wrong, and it is contrary to the national trend towards deregulation. This over-involvement by the commission is also why it has stretched itself too thin. The answer is not more money and more staff. The answer is for the commission to concentrate on the basic regulatory areas as contemplated by the legislature: service area certification, rate making, and consumer follow-up. The commission simply must make better use of its human and financial resources and let the consumer-elected policy board and its managers manage the utilities. Let me give you a few examples. Cost, for instance. Through its ability to allocate cost to the utilities, the commission has a virtual blank check. It can go anywhere at once with little, if any, accountability. Excerpts from the commissioner's letter responding to the Division of the Legislative Audit's new performance report of the commission states, due to the APUC's general operating budget shortfall for the past two fiscal years, it has been the policy of the APUC to allocate, wherever practical, all allocable expenses to all parties except the APUC staff. Prior to fiscal year 83, the APUC had allocated some expenses incurred from the operating budget to the APUC staff. Based on a recent study also, the average length of time for a rate case is 15 to 16 months. It is not unusual for dockets to remain open for 2 to 3 years. This adds a considerable financial burden to the utilities and the consumers, some of whom are your constituents. Senate Bill 64 would expand and accelerate this because it would formally permit allocation to utilities of all staff expenses, including those of the Attorney General's office. It would permit assessment of expenses during as well as after hearings, as is now the case. This removes the legislature from exerting any meaningful budgetary control over the most important agency. Commission actions, including studies, have cost Chugach more than $2.2 million in the past 3 years alone. This does not, I say does not, include Chugach staff time, which alone would be staggering. Example of the commission level of involvement. On February 25 of 1985, they submitted a letter that required that Chugach seek commission's approval, regardless of the estimated cost, from any changes or additions to Chugach's microwave system. That's just one of many that we get day after day, requesting many things that take up valuable staff time, our manager's time, as well as cost. It's buried in the tons of paper that they request that we do. As far as the service and safety standards regulation, in 1982 and 83, the APUC issued 7 pages of service and safety regulations. Following the public hearing in mid-83, the regulations disappeared. They were reissued in January 1985 in 49 pages. on 49 pages. We went from 7 to 49 pages, covering far broader range of issues and areas. These regulations are just proposed, and they are still open for public comment and hearing, but they show where the commission is heading and what it sees as its mandate, and it's scary. One area the APUC appears to be increasingly interested in is utility planning for generation. Regulations would require Chugach to file with the APUC 180 days before construction, things such as a proposed site, generating capacity, fuel type and source, operation data, load forecasting data justifying the plant financing, and other information that APUC may require. There is no apparent obligation for the APUC to act timely on any of these matters. The quality of service. First of all, we all have the same goal, as Mr. Hodgen just stated, safe, reliable power. We adhere to the National Electric Safety Codes and other industry standards. This area we feel represents APUC exceeding the scope of their knowledge and expertise. They are setting unrealistic goals. They mandate no outage more than 90 seconds. It requires non-existent or outrageously expensive technology. According to the APUC order, violation of these regulations will constitute presumption of inadequate service and or safety. Chugach presently meets or exceeds current industry safety practices and standards. However, because of the presumptions of these regulations, it exposes the utilities to potentially staggering liability, regardless of the negligence of the utility. In summary, we feel these regulations exceed the APU scope and expertise. They attempt to supermanage utilities. Another issue is the wholesale contracts. It's an example of the commission not considering the full implications of its actions. In the summer of 1983, the commission asserted jurisdiction over wholesale contracts between Chugach, Matanuska, and Homer Electric, at least the pricing components of these contracts. And in the wake of this, there has been widespread confusion among the co-ops and their lenders regarding the status of the wholesale contracts. One effect has been a deterioration in relations among the co-ops themselves and with their lenders. It has led to confusion over financing for future power projects, such as the Bradley Lake project. I and other Chugach board members could go on for many hours, just as Mr. Hodgins could, but time is limited here. I want to thank you for this opportunity. Chugach stands ready to provide other information, and we look forward to testifying at future hearings on this most important matter. Chugach will provide written testimony as a follow-up to this oral testimony very shortly. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Murphy. Are there questions? Senator Ray?
Thank you, Chairman. What is the basis of Chugach's generation? Do they have their own generation supply, or they buy from somebody else?
No, sir, we generate.
Has there been an occasion for the APUC to mandate that you overextend yourself over and above that, what you are generating from water sources and use diesel power in order to supply demand?
No, they are just mandating that we do supply the power. They've not stated that we use diesel or any other particular.
But they have overextended it.
Yes, sir.
What I'm trying to get at is that in Juneau we have Snettisham, and we look forward to having a sufficient power supply here. And as time went on, this area built up, and as such, there was quite a request because of the oil shortages for electric, all electric. And then when it became apparent that we weren't going to get that we were reaching our top load level, the local utility, Alaska Electric Light, petitioned the commission to put a moratorium on electric heating. And they outright refused, which makes us go on to diesel generation, which doubles our... I can't see where that's within their promise to do those kind of things. Is that what you're talking about, on the day-to-day operation of your own utility?
Well, for instance, they mandated several years ago that Chugach have a total management audit, and at the time, it was very much needed. We spent $500,000 on a management audit, which went into detail to the point of what kind of toilet paper Chugach used and what color our vehicle should be. Now they are saying that they want to go out and spend perhaps up to another $400,000 to audit the first audit and determine whether that audit was right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davis.
Yes, thank you.
And that has to do with
your testimony. You said that you are not
in favor of the above.
Do you have any suggested amendments to the bill that you have in court? or the action of Central Superintendent?
Yes, I definitely do not favor, of course, their being able to allocate the cost to the utilities at all, because it does give them a blank check. Like most recently in our G&T proceedings, they decided that the APUC didn't have the money, nor did staff, nor did the ACAP program, and so they just decided that the three parties would split up the cost, whether we wanted to or not. I don't believe that as a consumer that I should have to pay for something that they might mandate, such as an audit of an audit, and to bring open a docket and keep it open for months and months and months. They need to have their area of focus. The reason that they're spending so much money and time is because they're getting into areas that do not pertain to their expertise nor to what they were originally set up to do. If they would stick to the areas of regulatory matters and rate and consumer complaints, etc., they wouldn't need the extra money to be going into all the various utilities and running it on a day-to-day management basis. And I am in favor also, perhaps, of those utilities who want to be regulated. If their members vote to be regulated, let them do that. Let them get out from under the regulation of the APUC. As it's been stated before, co-ops are a democratic function. I am elected by my members. If they don't like what I do, they'll boot me out. And I am the one that have to answer to these members. I'm the one that picks the general manager. He answers, or she answers, the board. I believe in those areas that it's not necessary for some of the utilities to be regulated if that's what our members vote to do.
Just one other question, Dr. Murphy. Could you provide
us with some written testimony on actual proposed amendments to the legislation?
Yes, sir, we'd
and
be happy to do that.
Would you still be in favor of
these municipalities
that are to not be regulated by the APUC, even if they
were receiving, let's say, substantial tax dollars?
And if not, then what other method would that?
Would you propose for the
oversight?
Personally, I'm, as I said in my testimony, I am not in favor of abolishing the APUC. As a consumer, I believe they have a function out there to help protect me as far as my rates and complaints are concerned. But I believe that there are many suggestions that can be made that would narrow the scope of what their work should be so that it sticks into the realm of what they were set up to do. And we would be happy to provide those such suggestions to you in writing. Great.
Thank you.
Right, thank you very much.
Are there any further questions? Thank you very much, and we'll look forward to working with you. Next witness will be Ron Berg.
Representative Navarro, representatives, my name is Ron Berg. I'm a director of Golden Valley Electric Association in Fairbanks. I was elected 5 years ago, and I'm currently serving as president. Golden Valley generates its own electricity. We don't have anybody that we sell to. We're all in-house. I don't have specific horror stories as Lloyd does or Dr. Murphy, but I concur with him. My perception of APUC changed shortly after I was elected to the Board of Directors. I felt that APUC did a function to protect my interest as a consumer. After I became a director, shortly afterwards, we had a rate hearing. At that time, I saw the added cost that the members were being forced to pay by APUC's actions in that hearing by allocating the cost to the utility for their staff time by hiring outside experts we hired our lawyers and our experts, and then we paid for their lawyers and their experts, and it just went on and on. And I was very upset at the time and didn't know quite how to respond to it. Since that time, as a director, I feel that the directors have the responsibility. We have the fiduciary responsibility. We're elected, and for 3 years terms, if we don't do the right job, the members can get rid of us, just like they can get rid of the regular representatives in the state. If they don't like what you do and you don't represent them fairly, then they're going to let you know. To specifically talk to Senator Ray's comments, the APUC this year, we've had a 10-year moratorium on electric heat, thinking it was good management. This year, without any request by SAPUC, ordered us to address that issue, put it in our rate hearing, and we now have no moratorium on electric heat, so we have the potential of load factor problems. Rather than to, I personally disagree with Dr. Murphy. I think APUC does not have a place with cooperatives because cooperatives are regulated by a board of directors that are elected by the members, and their charge is to look out for the membership. Where an owner, if we make too much profit, capital credits will return it to the members. It's not a for-profit operation. We're there to look and manage the welfare and the assets as member owners. I don't think that that's going to be the case. Representative Davis asked a question about looking out for the state funds. I'm not sure I have an answer for that. I'd like to go back and send some written testimony and lay some things down specifically so that you could have some recommendations from our board of directors how we view it. I can tell you in general that we're not happy with it. Over the 5 years that I've been going to meetings, I've never heard a good relationship between a utility, a cooperative, in the state of Alaska with APUC. It's always an adversary position, and I think that costs our members a lot of money. I'd answer a question, and I basically agree 100% with it, Lloyd Hobson and Dr. Murphy, other than Dr. Murphy's opinion that APUC has a role.
Thank you very much, Mr. Berg. Senator Ray?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sir, what did they tell you people as a reasoning for eliminating the moratorium and making you provide all electric again? What did they state was the reason behind that?
I'm not sure that I understand the reason. They've known we've had it all along, and I'm not sure whether Juneau's case brought it to light and they decided to address it and make us put a rate filing in for it and justify why we had it in there. We made the decision after that we would just really kind of acquiesce to them rather than the potential of one of these $400,000 or $500,000 studies. Again, we did one of those management audit studies for the APUC, and I'm aware of the extreme staff time and the cost, and I felt in the interest, and I think the other board members felt in the interest of the members, we're better off just acquiescing, allowing electric heat than to run the risk of having to open a docket with APUC.
Well, when I contacted the chairlady directly and told her the situation in Juneau, and I told her what it was going to do to Juneau, and in fact it would double the rates during certain times of the year, and I was told at that time impolitely that the commission knew more about it than I did, that they had a better expertise than I did.
Well, and we're of the opinion that the managers and the staff that we hire have the expertise, and the board of directors looks out for the interest of the members and sets the long-range policy. When we sign off on a loan, it's the board of directors that signs off on the loan. We're the ones that have our name on the line. It's not APUC that sets the rates and the margins of whether we're going to have the ability to pay our financing. And the length of time that a docket's open, I think it was slightly addressed. If you have financing and your banker wants to know what your income is going to be, if you have an interim rate, you certainly don't know what your income is going to be.
Well, if I might continue just for a minute, the unfairness of it is those people who have all electric heat, their heat doubled at the same time. Their expenses doubled. They didn't get any break on it. Their expenses doubled, and everybody's just paying double because of the diesel generation. And it just seems to me that the if that's expertise, I'll take something else.
Well, on your electric heat, we're fairly comfortable that most people aren't going to put it in because our rates are so high that you just couldn't afford it. The only problem is that actually for a spec house builder, it's much cheaper. And if they were to go in and start building houses with electric heat and sell it to some poor newcomer that come up there in the military, it'd be a real rude awakening when he got his winter bill.
Right. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Davis.
Thanks. I was going to say. say the same thing if he eats with electric and Fairbanks. The guy has deep pockets. But one comment I wanted to make, but and probably start to clarify
earlier
regarding not so much Golden Valley, but I was referring to small communities that are receiving power cost equalization. Should we not have any regulation on the rates? That was my reference, and that was what my comment was
directed.
Appreciate
you. Thanks, Senator.
Are there any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Burke. Next witness will be Edna Chapman.
My name is Edna Chapman. I'm president of the Member Advisory Council for Chugach Electric. I am a volunteer, a consumer advocate, and I am not an expert on a lot of this. I do a lot of work in the Chugach office because of the MAC involvement. I have been with the MAC for about 2 years, and during this time I have seen the volumes of paperwork that have been demanded by APUC. This puts undue stress and work on staff members and keeps everybody always in a constant turmoil to meet their requirements and their needs, which many times often go beyond the regulatory avenues. I feel that APUC definitely has a place, but I feel like they have many times gone beyond the field, their scope of expertise, creating undue workload for staff, also undue cost for all the utilities. One of my major concerns is that the management on it that Dr. Murphy mentioned, they demanded an audit, then they turn around and they want an audit of the audit. Isn't this costing undue amount of money to Chugach and also to the consumers, to your constituents, and to you and I? What right do they have to tell what color you can paint your vehicle? What right do they have to say what title you will give a job in your company or your co-op? Shouldn't APUC spend more time focused on the appropriate regulations than on things that are far afield or what they were originally set up for? Utilities seem to have no say or input into contracts that APUC lets. This is equal to giving them a blank check. And I, as an accounting person, would not ever give anybody a blank check, as I don't think any of you would. Why should we give one to APUC? I have learned about SB 64 in the last few days that I've been in Juneau. And now APUC is requesting that the utilities pay for their consultants, for experts that they call in, and for commission staff without being accountable to you as legislators. Isn't this going a bit beyond the original scope? If APUC stayed within their original scope, there would be much less need for more money, more time, and more staff. In reviewing the legislative budget and audit report that has just come out, I see that in 1983 they spent $100,000 collected from the utilities. In 1984 they spent $100,000 collected from the utilities. But in 1985 they spent $985,000. This is almost $1 million, tenfold what they've spent the two previous years. Why? Another point, the auditors reviewed 20 contracts that were issued by APUC for professional services, and they found 50% of these were inappropriately executed. If this had happened to a utility, such as Chugach or any of the co-ops, APUC would have come in immediately. They would have wanted to jump in and open up dockets, require and monitor and make correction, and they would want to make the corrections. And on top of this, we assume that because they have made the mistakes and they have to go back and do things, that the utilities will be billed for these extra expenses. And that is about the end of my testimony. These are but a few concerns of myself and other MAC people and consumers. I'm looking forward to testifying at a later date when we have other hearings on this issue. I want to thank you for your time and the opportunity to be here, and a written copy of my testimony will be forthcoming.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chapman. Senator, Representative Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chapman, I spent a little bit of time working with the MAC for my utility, so I know that there's a lot of commitment there, and I wasn't able to stay with it just because I wasn't able to devote as much time as I know is required of the people. So appreciate your volunteer work on that. I don't know how long you've been with the CEA MAC, but you know, some people have asked why are we suddenly noticing the Big Brother attitude or the interference from the APUC, and at least in Chugach's case, the recent history, you've had some headlines about some financial problems and so forth. Do you think that has brought about a renewed vigor from the commission? Do you think that's been one of the reasons why you're noticing more trouble now?
No, I think they have gone way beyond their original scope, and they just keep eking out, you know, just going on and on. You give them an inch and they're taking a mile. And I think that the legislature that originally set this commission up needs to limit the time that they're able to have open dockets.
That seems to be one of the most serious, those open dockets that apparently the legislature tried. I know a utility manager from my area was explaining to me that the legislature tried to require them to leave it open for no more than 6 months, but there's a loophole that allowed them to do the initial...
one little word, initial.
Right, for 6 months, and then the docket could remain open for a longer period of time. Thank you very much.
For the record, Representative Collins has joined us. Representative Davis.
And just a short comment that APUC is listening to this testimony today, and they'll be commenting on all the testimony.
We appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
The next witness will be Bob Husted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Robert Husted. I'm president of Matanuska Electric Association. I'm president of the Alaska Electric Generation and Transmission Cooperative, and I'm on the Governor's Council for Rail Belt Electrification. And I am concerned about efficiencies and accountabilities at APUC. The co-ops are intensely concerned about their financial health and its effect on future financing. We need rate adjustments to occur in a timely manner, unencumbered by bureaucratic sloth. We have to have proper rate structures in order to achieve proper times interest earned ratios. APUC creates financial hardships through sloth and meddling in management aspects of the co-op that are properly the responsibilities of the boards and staffs of the co-ops. Dockets can no longer be allowed to drag to lengths measured in months and years. I feel there are many arguments for nonprofit co-ops to not be regulated by APUC. And for those who feel the co-op organization doesn't work, they need only look to the boards at Matanuska Electric and Chugach Electric, where recent turnover of board members due to member concern about operation of the co-ops gives a strong indication of the involvement of those members of the co-ops. We have individuals who give good input to the boards. We have member advisory committees that give good input to the boards. We have the responsibilities of the board members. We have APUC oversight and ACAP intervention. every level performing the same job, watching out for the little guy. The only level elected by the little guy are the co-op boards. Now comes APUC, meddling in what rightfully is the responsibility of the board, including management of the co-ops and contracts between co-ops. I would at the least like to have APUC directed back to their original charge. And that concludes my comments.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Thank you.
Yeah, Bob, just I think the chairman had requested for any written suggestions for legislation change to be submitted to the committee. And I'd hope that in your several capacities you'd be willing to help us out in that regard, too.
I assure you we're not going to let the legislation slip by uncommented upon or without suggestions for corrections, additions, or deletions.
Thank you. That's an important part of the process. Next witness will be Mr. Leo Rode.
Leo.
Get him, Leo.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, members of the Joint Committee. I appreciate this opportunity to appear before you. My name is Leo Rode, spelled R-H-O-D-E. I am the president of the board of directors of the Homer Electric Association. I have been associated with Homer Electric either as an employee or a director for a total of 29 years. At one time, I was sitting where your people are now, so I can fully appreciate the responsibilities that you have to the Republic. To the public. My prepared statements, I do not have any prepared statements except notes, and my remarks will be extremely short. As I understand, the APUC was originally started primarily for the purpose of territorial protection. There was problems within for public utilities, municipal utilities, REA finance utilities, or private utilities had a conflict with line extensions. This was one of the reasons I believe that the APU was originally started from. The other probably was for establishing or system establishing of consumer rates. The rates can be, the rates were up at the time that the board, APUC board was established, was set by the board of directors in this with the assistance of REA, where there were REA finance co-ops. REA naturally wanted the rates to be in a bracket to where you could pay the debt service, and they're nonprofit corporations, so this seemed to be a feasible way to set rates. How much the APUC has grown out of line, I'm in no position to answer, but you have heard testimony to what other people might believe. But I do know that there is extensive studies, rate hearings. The rate hearings are expensive, and the rate hearings are extended months, if not year, which throws a financial burden on the co-ops. Also, there is attorney fees and research people with APUC, to which is passed back on to the consumer. And we don't think this is fair. In my opinion, I think those expenses should be in the APUC's budget established by the legislature. We are not in favor of eliminating the APUC, and I hope I emphasize this. It's hopefully the APUC activities will be curtailed by the legislature to provide minimum service to protect the consumer, to which we are dedicated to. As far as the HEA board is concerned, our board members, we have a 9-member board, and we have a total between board members and management, some 110 to 15 years of background in the utility business. So we feel that we are certainly capable of making the right decisions and good decisions in the interest of our consumers. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rhode. Are there any questions? We hope that you'll work with us also in drafting legislation. We hope that you'll work with us also in drafting legislation that will be hopefully good legislation.
Okay, thank you.
I've also been handed a note to ask that witnesses speak up as much as possible because some of the sites are having a hard time hearing us. The next witness will be Joy Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the joint committees. My name is Joy Foster. I'm a... It's on. I'm a member of the Manusco Electric Association's Board of Directors. I'm speaking today basically as an individual member of the association, but do share some views with the president who has already spoken to you. I do want to focus in on one particular problem that I perceive with the commission, and that is an usurping the authority of the Board of Directors as given by the members who we serve. There's a certain... analogy that I can draw here with yourselves. You are elected by many times the same constituency that elects the boards of directors for the different cooperatives. If you do not do the job, they have a proper checks and balances with which to control you or gear you into doing the job that they wish you to do. If you do not do that job, they will not elect you the next time, or if you're really messing up, they will impeach you or recall you. And they have that same opportunity to control or to regulate their own board of directors. I have a fiduciary responsibility here, which in many cases I feel has been usurped by the PUC by interfering in the director and also in the management responsibilities of the cooperatives. This chain of command normally from the consumer goes through the utility staff to the general manager, then to the board of directors. If at that time it hasn't been resolved, it should go to the commission staff or the Public Utilities Commission. I believe that in many cases the commission staff should ask the person or a member who is making a complaint directly to them if they have followed the proper chain of command. If they have not, direct them back through the proper chain of command. Oftentimes it's just the ignorance of the consumer of that proper chain, not because they're trying to subvert it, but because they just aren't aware of the proper chain. And it's my understanding there's been a recent study done by our statewide organization on complaints to the Public Utilities Commission by members of the cooperatives. And in Matanuska's case for the year 83-84, not one of the complaints that was received by the utility commission's staff was one that had reached the board of directors. That is not to say that the board of directors did not get complaints. Very often at our meetings we do deal directly with member complaints, but not one of the members who contacted the board of directors was not satisfied to the point that he contacted the commission staff after he was given the chance to go through the proper procedures. I am concerned that the APUC has overstepped and usurp the co-op director's fiduciary responsibility. Part of that responsibility holds me personally financially liable for the decisions of that board. Sometimes the decisions that the board makes, my vote, is altered by a decision or a directive from the Public Utilities Commission. But I am still liable for a directive that comes not by my own hand. One example that I can give you of the board attempting to see to the best interest of the members is that last year the Manusco Electric Association's board reduced our rates three times and we reduced a facilities charge once. And this was something that we did voluntarily and that we asked the commission to allow us to do. So we aren't trying to use the members, we're trying to do what is best for them. My personal wish is that this legislature will exempt cooperatives from regulation by the Public Utilities Commission. If it's not exempted, I would hope that you would restrict it to its original purpose, limit the time which it has to close dockets, limit its ability to pass on cost to the consumer through the cooperatives, and restrict their interference with my fiduciary responsibility and other directors with fiduciary responsibility that they've been given by the member owners of those cooperatives. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Foster. Are there any questions? Thank you. Next witness will be Doug Bechtel.
Good afternoon. My name is Doug Bechtel. I'm general manager of Cordova Electric Cooperative in Cordova. We're one of the deregulated utilities. In 1980, the legislature amended Statute 4205 to allow cooperative utilities on a vote of their members to become deregulated. The legislation that was passed at that time, we felt, was fairly clear. It established a cumbersome but fair voting procedure to make sure that all the members' interests were protected. And it said once the members voted to become deregulated, only very specific sections of the 4205 would apply to them. And the sections that continue to apply pertain to the service area, territorial protection, and under the Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity. In 1981, our members voted by a 3-2 margin to become deregulated, and we were certified by the Alaska Public Utilities Commission as a deregulated utility. In January, you've already heard, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but the commission issued a 49-page service and safety standards. And in these standards, they said they apply to all electric utilities. They apply to deregulated utilities. They apply to municipal utilities, which have always been exempt from the Public Utilities Commission. They apply to the small bush villages that are not part of the AVIC system. In short, they've more than doubled the number of electric utilities that are now coming under regulation. Without getting into the meddlesome portions of those regulations, our board of directors discussed them, and they passed what is probably the strongest resolution that our board has ever addressed to the Public Utilities Commission, which basically insisted that they leave us alone, that we are doing our job, and we had not had any complaints from our consumers, and we didn't feel that we needed these kind of regulations. Recently, the commission has come back to us and said that commission regulations are minimum standards, that if we do not meet those standards, then by definition, we have abandoned our certificate of public convenience and necessity, and therefore we will not be allowed to operate. What they've done is take the deregulated utilities and put us back under 100% regulation again, which is directly contrary to what the legislature approved in 1980. Now, what do we want? I've got four things. I would say first is we want the legislature aware of the commission excesses in this area. We want the legislature aware that we're fit, willing, and able to provide electric service to our community. As has been mentioned many times today, our board of directors is elected by the people of Cordova, the electric consumers. If they don't do the job the electric consumers want, they're not going to be there in the future. Just as the legislators, if they don't produce the kind of representation that their constituents want, they're not going to be back in the next term. The checks and balances are there for the cooperatives. I don't feel that any changes are necessary in the statutes. 4205.711H is very clear as to what happens for deregulated utilities. What I feel we need is a letter from the legislature of intent to the Alaska Public Utilities Commission that says, get off the case of the deregulated utilities. They voted not to be regulated, so don't harass them. That's all I have. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Are there any questions by committee members?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Next witness is David Heyer.
I'm David Hires. I'm general manager of Copper Valley Electric Association. I've been associated with Rural Electrics for over 20 years. Rural Electrics were conceived and have indeed proven to be a very efficient manner of management and regulation. The ratepayer, the member, is the bottom line, just as the voter is in government. I don't think that it's fair that our members are obligated to fund another layer of management that they have absolutely no control over. I support the other testimonies been made. My testimony is short, but I hope that it says more than the time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Heyer. Appreciate your testimony. The next witness will be David Neese.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to appear here. My name is David Neese. I'm the general manager of Kodiak Electric, and we're an REA cooperative with about 4,000 members. I won't go over what the other people have testified to. They say that I agree with it, but I'd like to focus on two things, and that's the length of time it takes to put a rate increase through or a decrease, and the length of time they keep dockets open, and an alternate method of considering rate cases. Designing rates aren't as complicated as they'd like you to believe. Relatively, they're very simple. In a recent rate case about 2 years ago, our statewide association invited a consultant from CFC up to explain to the APUC and our other members tier indexing, which is a matter of setting a band of rates up that where a utility could adjust rates upwards or down within a band, and if it got below that band, you'd increase them. If you got above that band, you'd decrease them automatically, and it would be a very simple matter to implement. Other states have done this. After that meeting, Kodiak Electric, two members of the APU staff, a member of the CFC, and another rate consultant sat down and devised a tier indexing method to be applied. And we asked that it be applied to Kodiak on an experimental basis. And we've never heard anything about it since. But that would cut down on rate cases considerably. You could go for several years before you'd have to go in and do an additional cost of service study. The other thing is the length of time it takes to get rates approved. First, you have to have a historical year. So first, before you start, you're in trouble. And then it takes some time, several months, to have a rate study done. Then you go into a series of hearings. You get their consultants and our consultants, and they argue. And finally, they take it away. And sometime later, it comes back and either approve it or disapprove it. It's hardly ever that a cooperative ever asks for rates that the commission reduces, but there have been numerous instances where the commission has increased what the cooperative has asked for. Someone mentioned Senate Bill 64, wherein they're going to require the utility to pay for both sides of the rate case, their consultants and our consultants, and all the expenses for both sides. That's like a person paying for the district attorney to prosecute him. And I don't know why they're bothering to pass that, because just 2 weeks ago they closed a docket that was open on us in 1980 for the village of Port Lyons. And and I got a bill for $990 for the chairman and the attorney to go over there. I remember that trip very well, because those two got the last two rooms in the village, and our attorney and myself had to sleep in the morgue. But in any case, with tier indexing, we could cut down on the expenses of rate cases and reduce the number of them, and if there was some regulation or statutory requirement for them to go back to the 6 months and train on a rate case, I think that would help matters a lot.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Neese. I'm glad to see that that stay in the morgue didn't have a lasting effect. I'm a new member to this committee. I was just curious if you could tell me what keep the docket open.
It means a case isn't closed. It's just open, just sitting there.
Thanks.
Representative Hanley.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on that, then what are the complications or what is the downside of that? This is just pending or no decision is made while that docket is open?
That's correct. Well, no, there is a decision. A lot of times it's an interim basis, subject to refund, and a lot of times there is no action. It doesn't mean anything. In this case, I think the only thing that had been open was streetlights, and they had, about 6 months ago, they resolved that case, and then officially closed the docket about 2 months ago and sent us a bill.
I'd like to point out for the record that Representative Ewing has joined us also. Representative Collins?
Yes, in terms of opening a docket, does the commission have to have a certain amount of criteria that says this is obviously something we have to look into, or can they just decide they want to open a docket on something?
Usually they start, if it's in a rate case, the utility files for a rate. There could be some action where the APUC would open it for some reason, but it would start with an order. And that order would have a number, a docket number, and you continue that to the docket's closed.
Let's see.
Senator Jara.
Yes, thank you. Dave, do you know how many cases are pending?
I don't, but I believe I've heard just yesterday, but I don't remember exactly what it was, but I believe Dave Hutchins has that information.
254
cases pending? Going back to how many years?
14.
1971.
We have some information here on that. The oldest docket and file of the Chugach MLMP boundary dispute opened in 1971. A total of 35 dockets opened prior to 1980 remain open today. Listed below is a number of dockets according to the year they were open. I won't go into that, but they started 71 and 81.
Okay. With the passage of Senate Bill 64, is that correct? Well, what would that mean in terms of costs to the utilities?
A lot. I don't know what that, but it means you pay both sides of it. And that's another aspect of... A lot of these consultants aren't necessary for these rate cases. They're not that complicated, but they become complicated in the process. And a lot of times they say, well, the docket's been extended because at the request of the utility, and it's extended at the request of the utility because the PUC asked for additional information and we have to have more time to develop it, so we request an extension.
So basically the fiscal note for the state would almost be a negative, whereas the fiscal note with the passage of that bill then for the utilities could be quite expensive.
It's going to impact the ratepayer. The ratepayer's got to pay. You got to pay for it in the end.
Okay. Thank you.
Pierce. Representative Pierce.
Of the 254 dockets that are presently open, are those just for electrical utilities, or is that for the total 112 utilities?
I believe these are electric utilities, aren't they? I can't answer that.
Thank you.
Could we also get a copy of that?
Yes.
Thank you. Are there any further questions? Thank you very much. The next witness is C.E. Frank.
Down to the right or the left? My name is Claude Frank, and you can tell I'm old because I had a hard time hearing my name. And I've got not too much hair and a lot of wrinkles, so I've spent a long time in the electrification field. 35 years. I've served 25 years as a manager in the lower 48. Retired, went to the rural field by invitation in the foreign area, to Indonesia for 15 months to promote the rural electrification concept in the Third Nation. I've come back to the States and was helping out on an interim basis in Macnight, where I've been for 2.5 years and intend to stay longer as long as my health is good and the fish keep biting. But I have just a couple of issues with the POC, and they range in the area of interpretation of law. And I guess when I read the word exempt and look at the dictionary, it's pretty explicit. You're exempt, totally exempt. But we find ourselves as an exempted utility, mandated by the members, being brought back in by rules and regulations that are proposed. And we find they're coining new words. Now, a new word that I've just seen in the past 2 days or so is partial exemption. Well, there's no such word in the glossary of the statutes, partially exempt. You're either exempt or not. And where they have taken in the power cost equalization, and I'd be happy to set this down in mythology in written form to you, but they have taken out of context kilowatt hour and kilowatt hours. When you look at the abbreviation of the capital letters of KWH, that's kilowatt hour. With an S behind it, it becomes plural. So in the calculation of energy equalization, they have taken an average or a mean of the cost of 750 kilowatts, whereas they should have been taken step by step, as the law says, kilowatt. And you might say, well, how does this affect you? Well, it affects me in no way whatsoever. But it does the consumers of Naknek Electric and every other small village that is using less than 750 kilowatts a month, and particularly if they're using 50 kilowatts a month, where the rate is 50 cents a kilowatt. That consumer should be getting near maximum equalization. But what he's actually getting is an average of what the 750 kilowatts are of that utility. And in the case of Naknek Electric, a 450 consumption compared to 750 would be about a nickel more in equalization for those consumers. And I feel, as many of the people have testified, that the Public Utility Commission should be given a very direct ruling as to the parameters that they have jurisdiction over, and not let them range far and wide at their whim. I want to thank you for your time, and I hope that if you have a question you will ask, I'd be happy to answer it if I can. And like I said, I will submit the methodology used by the Commission so that you can evaluate for yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Frank. Representative Davis?
Yeah, Mr. Frank, I appreciate your comments too. I'm just curious, when you're talking about the power cost equalization, is this problems that you're referring to with the actual law itself or with the regulations that have been promulgated from the law?
It's a combination of the two. It's the law and then the interpretation on the part of the staff of the commission to arrive at an eligibility amount.
Well,
I think there's a number of
legislators that are
interested
in the
implementation of that law. And
some of the problems
taking place.
I know there's certain
utilities that have chosen not to even need power cost equalization
because of the problem. So I'd like, if you could
address those problems perhaps in written form
at some later
time or if you're in town, I'd like to stand and talk to you.
I'd be most happy to do so.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I know there are other meetings that people have to go to, so if anyone has to leave on the committee, feel free to. That's all the names that I have, people who wish to testify. Is there anyone else who would like to offer testimony at this time? If not, we'd like to thank you for your interest and your concern and for the input that you've given us, and we'll look forward to working with you, hopefully, to address some of these problems. Thank you. With that, the meeting is adjourned.